So we made a decision a decade ago to basically admit all qualified students, to say that if you do what you need to do as a high school student, you take your college prep classes, you get decent grades, you do reasonably well on a standardized test, it's not going to be a debate about whether you're admitted or not. You are admitted. We began to accept a larger group of students. You know, the reality is, over this time period of the last decade, when our graduation rates are up by 62%, our SAT scores for incoming freshmen are down by about 30 points. That is a head scratcher for a lot of the experts, the pundits out there in higher education.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
And we have an opportunity today to speak with Dr. Tim Renick. At Georgia State University, Tim Renick has served as chair of the Department of Religious Studies and director of the Honors Program. Since 2008, he has directed the student success and enrollment efforts of the university, overseeing among the fastest improving graduation rates in the nation and the elimination of all achievement gaps based on students' race, ethnicity, or income level. Tim has testified on strategies for helping university students succeed before the United States Senate and has twice been invited to speak at the White House. His work has been covered by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time, and CNN, and cited by President Obama. He was named one of 2016's most innovative people in higher education by Washington Monthly, was the recipient of the 2015 and 16 Award for National Leadership in Student Success Innovation, and was awarded the 2018 McGraw Prize in Higher Education. He currently is principal investigator for a $9 million U.S. Department of Education grant to study the impact of predictive analytics-based advertisement on 10,000 low-income and first-generation students nationally. A summa cum laude graduate of Dartmouth College, Tim holds his MA and PhD in religion from Princeton University. Welcome to Digital to Learn, Tim Renick.
Great to be here. Hi.
Tim, we're glad to have you with us today. This is quite an honor for us, and we'd like to begin with some questions to just let our audience get to know you a little better. Not a lot of depth to these questions. As an example, the first one is, would you rather play sports or play instruments?
Well, back in college, I was a DJ on the radio station, so I guess I'm going to have to go with the music option there.
Wow.
I love that.
What kind of music did you play?
Oh, this was a top 40 pop station.
Oh, my goodness.
Who were some of the popular artists then?
Oh, I remember ELO and, you know, maybe a little Springsteen in there and so forth.
Nice. All right.
Would you rather live off the grid or in the heart of a big city?
Well, considering I'm sitting here in the city of Atlanta, having been raised in New York, I think my feet have voted for me. I'm a city person and long have been.
Very good. How about dine in or dine out?
Well, what's the point of being in a city if you're not going to dine out on a regular
Absolutely.
Basis?
Do you have a favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
Oh, I have lots of favorite restaurants. I guess Thai is my first option. So,
yeah.
I'm liking this guy better all the time.
Netflix or YouTube?
I'm a Netflix person. In fact, I watched Netflix this weekend. So yeah, definitely Netflix.
What are you watching recently?
I just watched Watchmen, but actually that was on Hulu. That was the most recent series I got through. I never saw it on HBO and just watched it this weekend.
Okay.
Are you willing to tell us how many shows you've watched consecutively? What's your record?
Well, I think it will reveal how cheap I am because Hulu was offering that free this weekend and only this weekend. So I watched the whole sometime between Friday and Sunday night. So
very impressive.
Very good. Okay, this is by far the most important question. And this may, in fact, end the podcast. So no pressure here. PC or Mac?
Yeah, I'm actually both. You know, Georgia State is a PC campus, and my desktop I'm on right now is a PC. but I travel constantly. I'm on the road 30, 40 times a year. I have 1.2 million frequent flyer miles on Delta.
Wow.
And I do all of that on Apple products. So it's iPad and iPhone and so forth when I travel.
Incredible. So when you travel, what kind of things are you doing?
Mostly what you're asking me to do today, which is talk about student success, talk about data and analytics, talk about closing equity gaps and so forth. Everybody is struggling with these same issues. And so people are always interested in what their colleagues are doing. And Georgia State's done a lot in this space.
Excellent.
Sounds like we need more of you.
Sometimes it feels that way.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get serious and talk about some real questions. Before we dig in, can you tell us a little about your story and how you ended up where you are today?
Yeah, unexpectedly. I'm a faculty member in religious studies. I started the religious studies program at Georgia State, came out of a PhD program at Princeton, was the first faculty member in religious studies at Georgia State, built a program, a bachelor's, a master's degree, eventually became the chair, the first chair of the religious studies department at Georgia State, never thinking I would get into student success and data and analytics and chatbots and micro grants and all these other sorts of things. I think the way I got into the field of student success was from kind of a personal conviction. My field in religious studies is religious ethics. I taught in very small classes, often teaching students three and four times over the course of their academic careers because we were just building up a new academic program. And I saw what Georgia State does really well, and I saw what Georgia State doesn't do well at all. I saw these really talented students go on to incredible success. I mean, we've had students from our religious studies program go on to get their PhDs from Harvard and Princeton and Oxford and Chicago. I also saw equally talented students swallowed up by the big bureaucracy that, you know, Georgia State and a lot of public universities have become. And I thought we not only could do better, but I thought we needed to do better. And so a lot of my move from an academic career in religious studies to what is now an administrative career, 12 years into it, in student success, is based upon, you know, kind of a moral imperative that not only we, Georgia State, but we in post-secondary education in the U.S. need to do a lot better.
It's wonderful, and I hear that from your answer, to be doing something that you love and something that you're totally committed to.
Well, I will say this about, you know, the current moment we're in, COVID-19, and, you know, there's some fields that have taken a moment or an entire day to say, we need to stop what we do on a day-to-day basis in our industry to think about issues of racial and social injustice, of working towards a more equitable and better society. And I tell my staff, and do this fairly regularly, you know, we're very fortunate because we come in every day trying to tackle problems of gaps in graduation rates based on race and ethnicity, trying to increase social mobility and so forth. We're not doing everything that we need to by any means, but on a day-to-day basis, our work is the work of trying to create a more just society.
That's awesome.
So could you give us a few more like specific examples of what you're doing at Georgia that's working?
Yeah, well, Georgia State has one of the most diverse student bodies in the country. So we're a majority minority institution, a so-called MSI. About 75% of our students are non-white. We have one of the largest low-income student populations in the country. This spring semester, we enrolled about 29,000 Pell-eligible students, meaning, you know, the majority of students who come to Georgia State are students who sit in the bottom quintile of Americans by annual household income. And so what we've had to do over the last decade, especially as our demographics shifted and we became more diverse with regard to low-income students and more diverse with regard to the racial and ethnic background of our students, is come up with ways to succeed with students who have not traditionally succeeded in higher education at large scale. I mean, the students we've increasingly enrolled at Georgia State over the last decade are the students that basically higher education in the U.S. has failed. And gaping equity gaps exist nationally between low-income and middle- and upper-income students, or between Hispanic and non-Hispanic students, or between African-American and white students. And what Georgia State has in each case done is use data and, we think, innovative but scalable practices to address those equity gaps. We believe we're the only large public university in the United States that for five consecutive years now has had its Hispanic, its African-American, and its low-income students all graduate at or above the rate of the student body overall. So at Georgia State, at least over the last 5 years, there have not been equity gaps based on race, income, or ethnicity. And that's a major accomplishment, not only a major accomplishment, but something that not only my colleagues in the field, but I must admit, I personally did not believe was attainable. You know, we're taught in our education research that equity gaps begin not merely in eighth grade math scores, but in third grade reading scores. And there have been some, you know, studies that show equity gaps are present in pre-K. And some of us have wrongly assumed from those studies that therefore, because these equity gaps begin in preschool or third grade or eighth grade, that by the time the students get to college, there's nothing we can do about them. And why I think Georgia State is so important is that we've begun to show, and there are other institutions out there very much engaged in the same work, that that's a lie. That just because these equity gaps existed when they were third graders or our students were eighth grader does not mean that there's nothing we can do to right the outcomes and make sure that students are supported and succeed at equal rates. And if there's any single message of Georgia State, it's that we in the post-secondary sector, those of us who work at colleges and universities, have a lot more power than we've given ourselves credit for. That we have the ability to transform these outcomes and overcome some of these trends that are traceable back to elementary school for our students.
That's very impressive. How did this shift in enrollment occur at Georgia State?
Part of it was the dynamics of the city of Atlanta, and part of it was quite intentional. So, you know, the city of Atlanta has gone through a lot of changes over the last 25 or so years. When I arrived as a junior faculty member out of Princeton, you know, Georgia State was a majority white institution, and the whole metro Atlanta region had a little over 2 million residents. What's happened over the last couple decades is Georgia State, as I've explained, has become an MSI, and the metro Atlanta population is now closer to 6 million. And a lot of the new population brought in a lot of diversity. We were, for a long time, one of the largest federal immigration and refugee resettlement sites in the United States. So when the federal government was bringing refugees in from other countries across the world, many, many of them settled in the Atlanta region. But the other part of it was, at the same time Georgia and Atlanta were becoming more diverse, so too Georgia State was changing its policies. So we made a decision a decade ago, and this is in my division as the head of enrollments at Georgia State, to basically admit all qualified students, to say that if you do what you need to do as a high school student, you take your college prep classes, you get decent grades, you do reasonably well on standardized tests, it's not going to be a debate about whether you're admitted or not. You are admitted. We'll admit all of you. We broadened our admissions criteria. We began to accept a larger group of students. You know, the reality is, over this time period of the last decade, when our graduation rates are up by 62%, our SAT scores for incoming freshmen are down by about 30 points. That is a head scratcher for a lot of the experts, the pundits out there in higher education. You know, as your graduation rates go up, your SAT scores have to go up, because graduation rates go up when you bring in better prepared students. Georgia State's taken a very different strategy. We've said, you know, we can take a broader group of students, and yes, on paper, they may not look like they're as well prepared, But given the right support, we're absolutely confident that they can succeed in college and we can graduate them at higher rates. We have now, for the last 6 years, been the institution across the United States, among all colleges and universities, that have conferred more bachelor's degrees to African-American students than any other college or university. That was in part through supporting the students much better. It was in part through broadening our access, our admissions criteria, and allowing a broader group of students who we were confident could succeed if given the opportunity to actually have that chance.
That is a truly inspiring story.
So what are some of those support systems that you've described that Georgia State has been able to put into place to come around those students and help them succeed?
Well, the most surprising thing about the supports we put in place are that most of them are not targeted by a particular demographic group. So for a long time, for the last 30, 40 years in higher education, the knee-jerk reaction is when you have a problem, you create a program, right? You know, you've got problems with first-generation students graduating or low-income students not succeeding in math. You create really targeted programs just for those demographic groups. What Georgia State has done over the last 12 years is create programs that are scaled across the whole student body. So probably our signature program, it's now 8 years old, is a use of predictive analytics in advising. What we're doing every day is, as we update all our information systems across campus, is we're tracking 800 different risk factors. We're looking at historical data for the kind of academic behaviors and performance that in the past indicated a student was likely to struggle, begin to get Fs, begin to drop out, and so forth. And we're tracking our current students for those same risk factors. Now, when one of those risk factors is triggered, the very next morning, an advisor assigned to that student gets an alert, and they have 48 hours for an intervention. They, put it simply, reach out to the students. Not by the dozens or the hundreds, but by the tens of thousands. Last year across Georgia State University, we had over 100,000 instances where academic advisors proactively reached out to students, not because the students raised their hand and said, look, I have a problem, I didn't do well in this class, or I'm thinking of changing my major and so forth, but because we saw in the data a problem and reached out to the student proactively. In many cases, we're now catching problems much earlier on. So one of the interesting things we found back in 2012 when we launched this program is that the first grade a student gets in his or her major is often highly predictive of their chances of graduating on time. So it's actual Georgia State data. If a political science major gets an A or B in their first political science course at Georgia State, they're graduating on time from Georgia State at about an 80% clip, which is great for us. If they get a C in that first class, not a D or F, a C in their first political science class in their political science major, they're graduating on time from Georgia State at a 25% clip. But before we introduced this new system of proactive advising, what we did with that C student was basically nothing. We passively passed that student on to upper level coursework in political science. Whatever weakness in their preparation may have resulted in the C grade in the introductory course oftentimes became exacerbated, right? There was more reading, more writing in the next level course. And for 75% of the students, those C grades began to turn into D's and F's. And even then we were passive. We'd let the student accumulate a few D's and F's and then intervene maybe a year later. Their GPA has dropped back down. They're on probation. If they were on an academic scholarship, they might have lost their scholarship. That was exactly the wrong approach, right, to help a student. What we do now is as soon as that C grade is recorded, even though the student is still in good academic standing and they're eligible to go on and take next level courses, we intervene then. Let's sit down and talk to the student. Let's look at his or her exams. Let's see if they are reading or writing issues that need to be addressed. Maybe the student is just working 40 hours a week, but why don't we diagnose the problem now when it is manageable rather than sitting back passively and waiting for the student to dig his or herself into a deeper and deeper hole? And that's what higher education does far too often. We passively sit by and wait The students who suffer the most are often the most underserved students, the students who don't have parents or brothers and sisters who have gone to college, who can nudge them and say, what, you got a C on this exam? Why don't you go to tutoring? Or why don't you talk to your advisor or your major faculty member and so forth? These are the students who don't know the early warning signs, and they're the students who oftentimes suffer the most because of it. What we call the system for our students, we've branded it actually for our students as GPS advising. Technically, it stands for graduation progression success in our nomenclature, but we want our students to think about this like the GPS in their cars. In the old days, you know, you'd make a wrong turn before GPS. You didn't know you made a wrong turn, and you get way off track, awfully hard to get your way back to your destination. Now with GPS, as soon as you're making that wrong turn, you're not even through the intersection, you're getting a recalibration. You're getting a notice that this was a wrong turn, and here's the way to right your direction. So you get to your destination much more quickly and much more effectively. And that's exactly what we think we need to do as an institution with our students. Not just for our low-income students or our first-generation or African-American students, for all of our students. Let them know if they've made a wrong turn and get them righted as quickly as possible. Now, that's just one of the interventions. We can talk about additional ones, but I'll pause here and see if you have any follow-up questions.
Well, as someone who got C's and D's across a whole variety of majors, I would like to say thank you.
Well, interestingly, when we launched the system back in 2012, we were surveying all the students who left the advising center, because this was new approach using kind of big data and predictive analytics to advise students, to ask them what they thought. And the most common reaction we got that first year was, where was the system when I first enrolled? Exactly what I needed. Yeah. I needed somebody to tell me. I didn't know I was, you know, a C grade wouldn't prepare me for the next level, or that I had made a wrong turn when I registered for this specific class in this specific order. I needed this kind of advice, and now we're doing it systematically by the tens of thousands every semester.
I would assume too that when a student gets a phone call from an advisor who says, hey, we noticed you got a C in this course, the reaction is probably, hey, you really noticed? Somebody really is out there watching? You really care about what I'm doing?
Exactly. We've seen the response rate from students to our inquiries go up significantly since we launched this approach. You know, think about it. You know, if you get in the mail a letter from your health provider saying, you know, dear client, you're going to pay a lot less attention than if it's a letter from your personal doctor saying, dear whoever, here's information about your particular health record and so forth. And that's just what we're doing now. In fact, we've told the advisors, your role is not to send general emails out to all the students about, you know, events coming up on campus or deadlines and so forth. When the student hears from you, we want the student to know that it's going to be personalized, customized information about them as individuals. And we think that that gets a much higher response rate from the students.
So how many total students are there at Georgia State?
We have 53,000 students at Georgia State across now 6 campuses in Metro Atlanta.
And in the midst of all that, you are totally personalizing the higher education experience. That is inspiring.
And it's not just this use of data in advising. It's a number of other tools that have kind of become signature programs at Georgia State. We were the first school in the country to use an AI-enhanced chatbot to promote student success. So a chatbot is an automatic texting platform. What we did is we built up a knowledge base of thousands of common answers to commonly asked questions by students. And we work with the tech provider to put all those responses on smart device. So students don't log on to an app, they just go onto their texting platform and begin a conversation with Pounce. Pounce is the Panther, our school mascot, and they can talk to Pounce 24/7. Anytime they have a question about anything going on in their lives, about academics, classes, parking, the health clinic, anything they're concerned about, they can text a question to Pounce. And what the AI does is go into the knowledge base, uses algorithms to pull out the right response. But when it comes to the personalization, the point you were just raising, it's all very personalized. Pounce responds, oh, I see, you know, Gretchen, that, you know, you talked to me last week, and now you're asking, you know, questions about this issue. Can I help you with this? And so forth. And the first 3 months that we had this chatbot available, we had over 180,000 questions answered about via this platform to students. Interestingly, we found the usage of the chatbot was that first month, but it remains so even to this day, higher at 1 a.m. than at 9 a.m., which tells you something about our, you know, practices in higher education. You know, we're happy to open our offices every morning at 8:30 in the morning at Georgia State. That's not when most of the students are raising questions.
So yeah.
Chatbot is there 24/7 to, you know, raise those questions even in the middle of the night. The more sobering thing we found when we launched the chatbot, and this was back in 2016 that we launched our chatbot, is we did focus groups with the students who used the chatbot that first semester. We asked them what their experiences were, what they liked, what they didn't like about the chatbot. The most sobering thing we heard was multiple students confess to us that they asked the chatbot questions that they wouldn't have asked a human being. You know, the students were embarrassed to admit they didn't know the answers to certain questions. And some of the questions that they had were very personal in nature. You know, one of the actual examples was, you know, a student who couldn't get his biological father to sign the federal application for financial aid, the so-called FAFSA, because he hadn't seen his biological father in a couple years. Well, he didn't want to go to some stranger's office and explain why he couldn't get his, you know, biological father to sign, you know, this financial aid form. He was very comfortable asking Pounce, asking the chatbot. And it turns out there are workarounds in most of these issues if we can learn what the holdup is from the students. We've had lots of students, for instance, who were getting held up from being able to register for classes because they couldn't get immunized for the immunizations that were required by Georgia Public Health. And in many cases, there were financial issues that were at the root of it. And some of these students were embarrassed to admit that they didn't have health care and they couldn't afford a vaccine and so forth. But they tell Pounce these things. And, you know, interestingly, since we've launched the chatbot back in 2016, we've also launched a program where students can get free vaccinations across Georgia State because this problem was brought to our attention in much clearer way by our students' conversations with Pounce, the chatbot, than it was ever made clear to us when they actually had to come into the health clinic and talk to a real person.
So how easily transferable would that technology be to another institution?
Well, substantially transferable. In fact, we made a commitment when we signed a contract with the tech partner we use that the knowledge base, all the answers to the questions that we've been developing at Georgia State would be open access. And we've shared this knowledge base with a number of other campuses and we'll continue to share the knowledge base. A lot of the work that goes into launching the chatbot is coming up with answers to questions. Some of those answers are very specific to your particular campus, right? Where do I get tutoring for chemistry? It's going to be a different answer at Georgia State than it is at another university. But a lot of the answers are universal. For instance, if you're asking questions about financial aid, especially federal financial aid, and a great number of questions we get to the chatbot are about federal financial aid, the question is the same in Georgia as in California, as in Maine, as in Michigan, right? Mm. You know, how you apply to the FAFSA, what you do if you can't get your biological parent to sign on to the form or get their tax returns and so forth, the answers are the same. So by sharing the knowledge base, we can give other campuses a head start on being able to answer these questions. In fact, we've talked to some states, including to our own state of Georgia, to see whether there could be a statewide chatbot to help high school students who are transitioning to college answer all the questions they have. Because in many, many cases, the questions are exactly the same from one high school student to the next.
Thank you for joining us today on the Digital to Learn podcast. We're going to be back with part two with Tim Rennick.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.